to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, September 9th, 2018.
Commemorate the 17th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center, a dark moment in our nation's history, a moment which is one of those moments in history that I'm sure you can remember exactly where you were when you heard the news. I remember that night we held a memorial service at our church, a prayer service, because there was this need to come together and to pray. There were all these feelings of grief and anger, and we just didn't know what to do with all those feelings. And I remember at that service offering a prayer for the victims, of course, but I also prayed for the perpetrators. And I want to tell you, I got a lot of pushback for that because people, I think still in my own heart, I could feel the anger about those dastardly attacks on innocent people. And anger at those who would do such a thing. And yet there was this call to pray for our enemies. It's hardwired into our Christian faith to pray for our persecutors, to pray for our enemies, to love our enemies. One of the hardest commandments that Jesus gives to us. I think about that in the quotation in our gospel today. To love our neighbor may be the most challenging, it sounds so easy, but the most challenging part of our Christian walk in faith. The 9/11 attacks inflamed a kind of anti-Muslim feeling in America, which has kind of persisted. There's this deep suspicion of those who are different from us. And it made me think back in history, because this idea of separating ourselves into groups and looking askance at others is really, I think, fundamental to human nature. There's a great story that is told of St. Francis of Assisi, the great Italian saint. He lived in the 13th century, and during his life, one of the Crusades was being held. This was another period of Christian-Muslim warfare and hostility, and Muslims had taken over Jerusalem and the Holy Land, and Christians were sending armies over and over again to try to retake Jerusalem and the Holy Land. And so St. Francis, though he was a pacifist, went along with the army, the Christian army, to see what was going on. And while he was there, there was this pitched battle, and one of the big victories was won by the Sultan of the time, Malek al-Khalid, who was the nephew of the great general, Muslim general Saladin. And he was impatient to bring an end to this war, and so he put a bounty on the heads of Christians, a gold coin for every Christian head that his soldiers brought back. That's how tough it was. I mean, that's how inflamed this was. And to be honest, the Crusaders were not much less bloodthirsty. On their way to fight the Muslims in the Holy Land, they got so upset with any non-Christians that they went through Jewish neighborhoods setting houses on fire and killing Jews. That's the kind of climate that they were in. So here's St. Francis watching this battle and bloodshed and the horrors of war and this horrible hatred between these groups. And he says to himself, what shall I do in following Christ? And so he decides that he is going to, by himself, actually he brought one friend with him, another monk, and the two of them crossed enemy lines, unarmed, and were quickly arrested, not killed, fortunately. The bounty, I guess the soldiers waited to get their bounty. And anyway, they roughed them up a little bit, and they brought them to the Sultan. And there's a famous, famous story of St. Francis meeting this Sultan and proclaiming the gospel to this Sultan. think of him there in chains, probably, under guard. And the Sultan apparently was so moved by St. Francis' simplicity and holiness that he, one, set him free, and two, kept him as a guest and had several conversations with him. St. Francis talking about his Christian faith, but also listening to the Sultan's description of his Muslim faith. They parted as friends, and from there on, the Sultan treated the Christians that were in the city he had captured with great kindness, took off the bounty on the heads of Christians, and changed his whole way of operating. St. Francis was an ambassador of peace because St. Francis, probably uniquely in that moment, could see beyond the categories that were dividing people and looked at this Sultan first as a child of God and as a person who needed to hear the good news of the gospel. It is very hard to have the heart of St. Francis, I think, in a world which is constantly dividing us and separating us, which is always putting pressure on us to align ourselves with one tribe or another tribe and to only love the people in our tribe and to look down on the people in other tribes. We see that constantly, this pressure in our world today. And it's comforting in a way to know that it really hasn't changed much since the time of the Bible and the early church, that it was true in St. Francis' day, but it was also true in the early church. The Epistle of James talks about the problem they were having in the church. Remember, there was this deep suspicion in the church between Christians who had grown up Jewish. They were the real Christians because they were circumcised and they were part of the tribe, and these new Gentile converts who were coming into the church and messing everything up. They weren't circumcised, they weren't real Christians, they were newcomers, and the old crowd looked on the new crowd with great hostility and suspicion. And it was even worse, James says, because people were showing favoritism based on wealth and class as well. When rich people came to church, everyone said, hey, that's great, a new pledge, come on in, let's give you a seat of honor. But when poor people came into the church, they were treated as less than. This was also the experience of the Syrophoenician woman in today's gospel. As a woman in her culture and as a Gentile in a Jewish-controlled city, she, her whole life, had been treated as less than. She knew that she was not equal to the other people in her society. And yet, as a mother, she was desperate for the well-being of her child. Her child who was convulsing. We might call it epilepsy. I don't know if it was demon possession or not, but in those days, there wasn't much of a distinction between epileptic seizures and demon possession. Whatever the cause, whether it was a spiritual cause or a physical cause, she was desperate to save her child. She would do anything and face any scorn. And so when she heard that this Jewish rabbi, this miracle worker, was in town, she rushed to kneel at his feet and to beg him to heal her daughter. And then comes, to me, one of the most shocking things in the entire gospel. Did you notice this? He says to her, not, woman, your faith has healed your daughter. He says, why would I give the children's food, the Jewish children, to the dogs? That is an insult. That is treating her again. It's confirming everything she had always heard, that she would be scorned and looked down on. And here's Jesus apparently doing the same thing. We don't know. I'd love to know what was actually going on in Jesus' mind at that moment. I don't know if he was really putting her down or if he was testing her faith to see if she had the persistence to keep asking. But she comes right back at him. I always wonder, do you ever have this experience where somebody says something and you want to come back, but you can't come up with the right zinger right at that moment. And then, like 3 hours later, you're home and you think, ah, I know the perfect thing I should have said, right? You ever have that happen to you? It happens to me all the time. I can never come up with it in the moment. She came up with it right in the moment. She came right back to him and said, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs under their master's table. And I imagine that Jesus smiled. He might have laughed out loud to see the wit and the grit and the persistence of this woman who had been treated as less than her whole life, but who refused to give up and was persistent even in the face of an apparent put down. He smiles, I think, and he says, because you have said this, your daughter is healed. Go in peace. We know that God, and really in the whole life of Jesus, I cannot really believe that Jesus put her down because he didn't care about her. Because the whole life and ministry of Jesus is about lifting people up. It's about fulfilling the prophecy that God will heal the blind and the deaf and bring prisoners out of prison and elevate those who are oppressed and bring them into God's kingdom of equality and plenty and abundance. His whole ministry was about that. It was about breaking down the distinctions between people and making us all part of one community of love. That was his whole purpose. And in our scriptures today, God reminds us that that is central to our identity and our belief and our understanding of God's kingdom. That in the end, there are no distinctions, that all people are made in the image of the same God and are recipients of the abundance of God's love. And that our task is to overcome our human programming that is so divided and that always wants to rank people in an order of who's greater than and who's less than, to overcome that programming and to see with the eyes of God, to live with the love of Jesus, to be like St. Francis, who even in the midst of warfare and passionate hatred could look upon his enemy with love and respond as an authentic servant of Christ. So I ask us to do a little personal review. How might we change that script in our society? How might we live more into that reality as a church? And how are we doing as individuals in our own hearts and minds? Are we allowing ourselves to be divided and to let those fears and hatreds infest our hearts? Or are we praying for God to give us the eyes of faith and of love and of compassion and of openness? I pray that we might be able to take some steps forward in our own lives as a church and as a society to inhabit more fully the kingdom that God is inviting us to be a part of, the kingdom of mercy and justice, of love and abundance for all.